humbug.
Christmas is a bother. The noise, the crowds. I really wish it were outlawed.
How can they talk about Santa Claus when there's so much unhappiness in the world?
Poor misguided folks. They missed the whole point. Lots of unhappiness? Maybe so. But doesn't Santa take a little bit of that unhappiness away? Doesn't a smile on Christmas morning scratch out a tear cried on a Saturday? Not much, maybe. But what would happen if we all tried to be like Santa and learned to give, as only he can give, of ourselves, our talents, our love, and our hearts? Maybe if we could all learn Santa's beautiful lesson, maybe there would finally be peace on earth and goodwill toward man. Hey, it's getting late, and I've got these letters to deliver. And you better be getting home, too. And remember, behave yourselves, because Santa can still look into his magic snowball and see just what you're up to. And now that you know all about him, you can be darn sure that come snow or high water,
Santa Claus is coming to town. You better watch out, you better not cry, you better not pout, I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town. He's making a list and checking it twice. He's gonna find out who's naughty and nice. Santa Claus is coming to town. He sees you when you're sleeping. He knows when you're awake. He knows if you've been bad or good, so be good for goodness sake. Oh, you better watch out, you better not cry, you better not pout, I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town.
With little tin horns and little toy drums, hooty-tootle-toots and rowdy-tum-tums. Santa Claus is coming to town.
Curly-headed dolls, the toddle and coo, elephants, boats, and kitty cars too. Santa Claus is coming to town.
The kids in girl and boy land will have a jubilee. They're gonna build a toyland town all around the Christmas tree.
So you better watch out, you better not cry, you better not pout. Santa Claus is coming, Santa Claus is coming, Santa Claus is coming to town.
Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world, and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million, if I had $1 million, well, I'd buy you a house, I would buy you a house. And if I had $1 million, if I had $1 million, buy you furniture for your house, maybe a nice Chesterfield or an ottoman. And if I had $1 million, if I had $1 million, well, I'd buy you a nice, reliant automobile.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
We are live.
Well, welcome back, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Waller on the board. S&P futures
We're up. We're putting money in. We're up, which is, you know, that's a good thing. Up 34. NASDAQ futures up 145. We were down on Friday, but then we flew way back up. So we were, where did we end up on Friday? Might as well, since I'm going to talk about it, might as well mention it. Actually, we're down a little bit on Friday. We're up on Thursday. Friday, we were down 73, and then we're down 398 in the NASDAQ. We turned down late in the morning. It was Thursday. We had the big move up from being down. So today, we're going back the other way. So we'll see where that lands. What'd you think about the, were you at the Bears game yesterday, James?
No, I was watching it from the comfort of my father's apartment.
This is not good. I ran to a couple of people Saturday night, and they were going. So, there you go.
Well, I did see them on their way. You know, I get on the Roosevelt L stop. I saw a lot of people there.
Well, it was only
getting off.
It was like the fourth or fifth coldest game. I used to go to these things a lot, so I, you know, everybody grief about it. But I used to go to the game. My cousin had tickets. He had tickets at Wrigley Field, believe it or not. And then he had tickets at the new place, Soldier Field, the first iteration of Soldier Field. And he was, I think he was 50-yard line, 15th row, something like that. And when they came out with the seat licenses, he applied for a seat license. And for some reason, you had no preference on the seat license for however long you were there. So somebody who got tickets like the year before in the end zone had the same seat license, you know, status as he did. So he didn't get them. So he ends up over on the side of the great unwashed, you know, up the upper deck, west side. And this is what's, you know, I'm not going to critique Jimmy and the world whether or not it's better, worse, or in the barrel, as they used to say, but I'm just going to say it's different. The, when my parents, well, they never had them, but the president of Waltham Watch at the time had Bulls tickets way back in the day. I'm talking about, you know, Artis Gilmore, Jerry Sloan days. And his season tickets were about the end line in like the 20th row. And every year, this is over a 5 or 6 year span, every year they moved to a better seat. You know, people gave up on them or did something or died or whatever the hell happens to people. And I'm going to say at the end of 5 or 6 years, they were top of the free throw line. I mean, top of the key. Same row, or maybe even a row below. So every year or so, they moved over a little bit to better seats. And my cousin has had these seats. How long have they been here? 20 years? Since the remodeling? It's been that long, right? Or 19 or something?
Yes.
His seats have never moved. So you can't tell me that in 20 years, nobody in front of them have passed up their seats or croaked or something. So somebody must just know somebody or pay up to get them. And why shouldn't people move up as other people leave? That he never has. I don't think anybody does that anymore, do they? Or how do they, if somebody in the first row decides they don't want him, what do you do? Just give him to a buddy?
I have no idea. I know the Cubs every once in a while tell us that we can move up one row. And, you know, but you pay a price, and we always decide that it's just not worth the price to move up one row.
Why would you pay a price to move up a row?
Well, the Cubs are telling you, hey, we got this, but this is what the new cost of the...
But I'm saying, you guys, if you move up a row, you should, if anything, if you're the third row off the field, then you move up to the... Well, first of all, what they ask you to move up? You want the third.
No, you're moving up or down a row, I'm sorry.
All right,
down
okay.
A row.
But if you guys move down a row, you're in a whole different section, right?
No, I'm in the third row on the, you know, upper side. I mean, if we move down to what is considered the field box.
That's what I mean. Yeah. You move into a different stratosphere.
Right. No, we wouldn't be moving into a new stratosphere. We'll be moving from row 3 to row 2, and we are in the other, you know, we're not in the field boxes.
So it's the same as, in other words, if you're two above the aisle and they move you down the aisle, yeah, those are a lot more dough, right?
Yes.
No, that's interesting, but that's the way that is, I guess. Anyway, the standings as of today with all the injuries yesterday, you know, it's I'll admit, I had the Bears with like 4 or 5 wins, right? And the reason why I did that is I thought the Bears are going to be somewhat better. But I looked at their schedule, and the schedule on the face of it looked horrendous, because they had to play the AFC North, which is the Steelers, the Ravens, the Bengals, and the Browns. And the Ravens were damn near Super Bowl team last year. The Bengals with Jeff Burrow is a really good team. Steelers are always a good team, and the Browns I thought were a little better than they are. They had to play those guys. They had to play their schedule was bad, and I just went through, and their division was supposed to be very strong. So I figured, okay, they might win one game in the division. I just went through their opponents. I didn't make some, you know, tremendous mental exercise out of this thing, and it seems like all these other teams have just really fallen back, and the Bears are a lot better. But if you look at the, I watched the Vikings last night because they're like the only thing on except watching the Bulls, which is cruel and unusual punishment. The Vikings all of a sudden look pretty good. The announcer goes, "Yeah, this is like the first time all year they've had their offensive line together." All these other teams are kind of decimated someplace, and yet the Bears are playing a lot better, and quarterback's playing a lot better, and that kind of thing. The two tight end set, this kid they got, the tight end is playing really well. He and Komet make a tremendous pair. But their offensive line is pretty much, except for the left tackle, who they knew was, they didn't have one in the beginning, the offensive line has pretty much been the same every single game. That's got to be one of the few teams in football that can say that, Jimmy.
That is true.
I mean, I'm sure as hell not hoping anybody gets hurt, but all these other teams are, anyway, right now in the East, AFC East, you got the Patriots. Did anybody think they were going to be 11-3? They're 6-0 away. On away games, that's unusual. They're 11-3. The Bills, the Bears still have to. So the Bears have to play the Packers, the Bills, and the Lions. So they, you know, the Lions had one of the best teams in football. Their center retires. Did the guard leave, and somebody else got hurt. So the strength of their team was in the middle of their offensive line. All of a sudden, that's the weakness. Center tries to come back and doesn't pass the physical. So those guys are nowhere near as good as they were. Obviously, the Chiefs are out of it now, and Mahomes hurt. They weren't anywhere near as good as they were. Anyway, the Patriots, 11-3. The Bills are 10-4. So I got to believe the Bills, one of those teams is in, and one's a wild card, right? Now, the next league, the Steelers play tonight. They're 7-6. The Ravens are right behind them at 7-7. So whoever wins that division is in. There's going to be no wild card there. Now, from the Jaguars, I've not seen these guys play at all. Are they 10-4 good, or are they just playing crummy teams?
They're pretty good, actually.
You've seen them play? I've not seen them play.
I've only seen them play once.
They're not on TV at all. I mean,
they are, but not in our market.
But I'm saying they haven't been any game of the weeks or second games or Monday nights.
No, they were over in Europe. They were in the European.
Okay.
They did play in Europe this year. They played last year also in Europe. That's because they're... owner wants to move the team, or has made mention of moving the team to London. Not exactly a strategic move, but, you know.
There's a guy that I think if the Bears actually moved to Arlington, I bet the guy would want to watch Soldier Field. But anyway, that's another story. But the Texans are 9-5, so they could get a wild card out of there. Then you've got in the West, you got the Broncos at 12-2, so they're in someplace.
Oh, they've locked.
Yeah.
They're in the playoffs.
And the Chargers are 10-4.
Yeah, right now, if they win one more, they win their division. They're in the Chiefs' division, and the Chiefs are out.
They're out
officially.
And the Raiders are 2-12. They're totally out.
Yeah, and you can tell that the Raiders are starting to crack. Max Crosby's yelling at some of his other guys. I think some of their guys have just given up.
Well, I would say so. So somewhere between the Chargers, the Texans, I guess the Colts are still in it, but the Texans and the Bills, and I guess maybe the Colts, there's going to be 3 wild card teams, right?
Yeah. The other question is...
Anyway, 3 wild card teams or 2?
Phillip Rivers threw a touchdown. Now, at 34, he might be the oldest guy. The only other guy I can think of is George Blanda.
Yeah. There's only 2 wild cards, right?
No, 3.
Well, there's 4 divisions. So you got 4 division winners.
two get a bye.
Yeah, I think you get two wild cards. Baseball, you got three.
Okay. Well, we also have Mr. Flanagan on the line.
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised. I mean, that you can come back when you playing at 44. I guess is let's put it this way: it's not as astounding to me as a guy who used to play a lot of ball. It's not as it's not as astounding to me as somebody not in the game for a while and coming back. I mean, if you don't stop, it's not. Anyway, the National Conference, you got the Eagles. Looks like they're still going to win because the Vikings won last night, right? They're 9 and 5. You got the Bears at 10 and 4, the Packers at 9 and 4. So whoever wins that division, the other, I think, will be a wild card. Then you've got the South, which is the Bucks and the Panthers, 7-7-7-7. One of those guys will win, the other will not be a wild card. Then you've got the West, the Rams and the Seahawks, 11-3, and the 49ers, 10-4. So between two of those teams and, well, you know, if the Bears do not win their division, they could be out because the two of the wild cards are going to be coming from the West, right?
I don't know. I mean, the Bears right now have a really good chance of being in the playoffs. I mean, even if, I mean, let's look at it. I mean, we hopefully can beat the Packers because we know that Micah Parsons is out. And we probably have a pretty good chance of beating the Lions. The Lions, you just don't know what team shows up.
Well, when you have a quarterback that can't move and you lose two of your offensive linemen, you got a problem. Correct?
That is true. And they're going to have to play outside in Chicago on the last game of the year. So they're not a very good outdoor team is the other thing. They're good on the indoors and when you're not mobile. But right now, I mean, the Bears have the second best record in the NFC. Philadelphia is a game back. Tampa Bay, you know, the Seahawks are probably going to win theirs. They have it. We're tied with San Francisco.
I wouldn't give the Seahawks. Seahawks are tied with the Rams. Let's just say the Bears lose two out of three. Let's assume that. But they may not. But if they did, that puts them at 11-6. Right now, the Packers, because of this wacky tie they have, they could end up at 11-5-1. They win two out of three, which puts them ahead of the Bears. So the Bears don't win the division. So then at 11-6, they have to go up against the Seahawks and the 49ers or the Rams. They have to somehow beat out one of those teams in the wild card.
Yeah, the weird one that I see is that NFC East, New Orleans wins a tiebreaker over Washington, and they're only 4-10. Washington's 4-10. The Giants are 2-12. Dallas is 6-7. I mean, you're talking
but the Eagles are going to win that division. So
yeah, the Eagles are. Going
so
to
So the
win.
Other guys are the only. They're not going to be a wild card. The only wild card is going to be between the two of the four: Bears, Packers. Two of the five: Bears, Packers, Rams, Seahawks, and 49ers. Two of those are going to win, and two of them are going to get in the wild card, and two of them are out. Out. Out.
Yes. Well, we're getting to that time of year that people are going to be out.
Well, it's good. I tell you what, if the Bears are an 11-win team and they're out, that's going to suck. But look at how I don't think I've ever seen the league this stratified. Let's say the Giants are 2-12. The Commander. What happened to those guys? When the Bears were supposed to play, they had to play the NFC East as well. Well, the Eagles were a Super Bowl team. Well, they were Super Bowl winners. The Cowboys are good. The Commanders were an up-and-coming playoff team last year. The Giants, you know, the Giants sucked all along. So the Bears losing three of those. What happened to the Commanders? They're terrible.
Jalen Daniels is not playing very well right now. It's funny. Some of these guys that, you know, we of that class of Caleb Williams, besides Bo Nix, who's playing lights out, these other ones are not playing as well, and Caleb Williams actually really has shown steady improvement.
He's shown very good improvement. He's, his next move is there, his throw is a little more accurate, but his sense of the game has gotten a lot better. Of course, his line's gotten better, but still, a lot of it's on him.
Yeah.
So, anywho, the college sports, we'll get off this in a second. We have Mr. Flanagan calling. We got murders around the world to talk about. We got the market to talk about. As the market is way up today, not way up, but it's up after being down on Friday. As the Fed on Friday started putting money into the system. Now, tomorrow, we're going to try and get Carl call in for a little bit with Hal. Because normally one of our biggest shows of the month is the labor report, when Carl gets that. Now, the labor report's going to come out tomorrow, and it's going to be what? October numbers, and we're just never going to get the September numbers. Of course, if one were to take the October number, subtract the August number, what you should get is the September number, right, Jimmy? Or people in this country can't add anymore.
That's a good question. But
shouldn't the difference be the September number, or I got to go, or I have to go back to second grade here?
You might have to go back to school, Chief.
I don't know. How do you think I'd stand out a little bit? I don't think I'd fit in one of the desks.
I don't think any of us would fit in those desks.
No, that's those are bad. Anyway, I watched some of the college game, and the big thing in that was these bowl games. The one on Saturday night, prime time, was Washington against Boise State. And they played it. They call it the L.A. Bowl, whatever that is, and it was played in the new football stadium in the Rams Stadium, right? The place is huge.
SoFi.
Yeah, yes. There's not very many people there. And I'm thinking, what are these people doing here? I mean, I can't imagine any of these schools selling their allotment of bowl tickets. I mean, unless that's all changed. The last Kevin and I went through it. Well, Kevin went through it and I listened. Every school gets an allotment of tickets they have to buy. I mean, it's not like, you know, if Notre Dame would have gotten a bowl, you just show up and get money. They're going to send, you know, Notre Dame 20,000 or 15,000 tickets and say, you guys got to sell them. Well, if you have an alumni base, I think there might have been bowls the Irish didn't sell out either. The school essentially has to eat the rest. Remember the first year that Northern Illinois went to a bowl? Was this like 10, 15 years ago?
Yeah.
And the school had no chance of selling like the 8,000 or 10,000 or 12,000 tickets. So the state of Illinois was so happy to get Northern Illinois in a bowl game. I think they picked up the tickets and distributed them to God knows who. No, but maybe I can't imagine 15,000 people wanting to dash down Saturday night to L.A. From Boise State. Can you? Where the hell is Boise? Boise State's in Idaho, right?
Last I checked.
It's where?
In Idaho.
Yeah, I'm saying. I mean, I guess, you know, if you're in Idaho, you might want to go to L.A. for the weekend. It's probably in the wintertime, but I'm saying it's not really like a major event. I mean, I can't imagine why anybody would be doing that. So I wonder where all the money's coming on these things. I know it's 3 hours of prime time. Now, other than people with nothing else to watch, or you're somewhere where it's on TV, or you bet on the game, who cares? Or am I just being grumpy?
I think you're being a little bit grumpy.
Well, I mean, I went through the list yesterday. I don't even know who these teams and these bowl games are. Just what is the point? I guess it's just TV. But meanwhile, around the rest of the world, we got how many murders we got going? This thing in Australia is really something.
15 in Australia, 2 at Brown University that I know of.
The guy at Brown, this morning, according to News Radio 78, they let the person of interest go. So now they have no suspects. So they're telling everybody to leave school. They ended a semester early. I don't know what's about, if they're halfway through finals or all the way through or what. But the thing in Australia, a father and son group. I can you imagine? I was going to say Thanksgiving dinner, but they don't have Thanksgiving dinner in Australia. What a normal dinner's like in that family? What do you think the conversation's about? Are these guys? Is there any edge between them and Jewish people? I mean, it's not like they're, not that it would be justified. It's not like they're a Palestinian who's lost four family members. How does anybody in Australia gather up this kind of hatred? Or you got to hate somebody? Well, I don't understand this at all. But it's evidently part of the. And what is it about Brown University? Just somebody's got to. Well, I mean, I want to say one of the first mass shootings, but one of the first mass shootings was what? Was it the Texas School Book Depository in 1959? Right. the 59 where the guy blasted a bunch. What is it about people shooting students that everybody gets a big thrill out of? I don't get that.
I have no idea.
Is it just if one person does it, then that's where you got to go shoot people?
All I know is that in Australia they were having a celebration of Hanukkah. Yesterday was the first day of Hanukkah. And
they can do it on the beach. We can't really do that here on the beach, can we?
No, but I honestly don't know if how big the Jewish population in the country of Australia really is.
Well, maybe we could check that. I'll check that on break. Are we, Mr. Flanagan said he was going to call in.
He is.
John, you with us?
Morning, Jeff. Morning, all.
Do you have a stab on how big the Jewish population is in Australia?
No, but I would bet in Sydney. I mean, that would where you would expect to be the biggest representation, because you know it's an international city. So yeah, you could probably get that. Ask AI, Tom.
AI. You know, I actually AI is getting a little bit better. I don't have to check it as much as I used to have to. I used to check it all the time, and it was always like wrong. But now it seems like it's getting a little better. I was looking at it's now my go-to place for revenue per share on some of these. Australia has 120,000 Jews, most residing in Melbourne and Sydney. It's 4 to 5% of the 0.4 to 0.5% of the total population. So there. I don't know what that. Any idea of? What these guys' connection to Jewish people was? I've never read anything about that. Have you?
No, the father died, and the son is still alive, right?
Yeah.
A critical condition, but they expect him to survive, I think.
All I know is that they are right wing, and they, you know, decided to make an action. Now I know it's very difficult to get weapons in Australia.
I don't think it's difficult to buy a rifle, is it?
No, they have very strict gun laws.
That I know. I think they got rid of just about all the handguns. I just say I don't know.
The school shooting there back in the 90s, I think. Like 95 or 96. And after that, I mean, they had really draconian gun seizures. And you know, it's hard to own them.
I just say, but I mean, it's also a huge, I use the term agrarian. You can't keep a rifle out of the hands of a farmer out in the middle of nowhere with snakes and crocodiles and running over the place.
True.
I mean, I just wonder if... I mean, here, none of the gun laws include long guns, do they?
No. I don't think we have anything against... I mean, you could buy a assault rifle, so obviously no.
Well, I'm just kind of curious as to how that... what are they, did they use regular rifles, or...
They had permits, right?
They were legal to carry the weapons that they have. What I also know is Australia has now a internet ban for anyone under 14 years old.
Here's AI. Australian gun laws include strict regulation on rifles, with most semi-automatic rifles banned from civilian use, blah, blah, blah. Other times the rifles are permitted under strict licensing and registration requirements, generally for genuine reasons like farming, pest control, or sport shooting. What kind of spider can you shoot with a rifle? Pest control.
A big one.
a big fat one, I guess. Anyway, what do you say we go to break and we'll come back and we'll pick this up. S&P futures up 30, NASDAQ futures up 124. The labor numbers are coming out tomorrow, and I think we've got the CPI numbers either Thursday or Friday. I'll check on that. You're right back, Stocks and Jocks.
Listen, are you a 50-year-old person looking for term life insurance? Then you need to talk to Bob. Bob specializes in helping people find $1 million or more of term life insurance for a couple of $100 a month. Look, you need to know there's a price war in the term life insurance business, and you may be paying too much. Call Bob, and he'll shop and see how much money he can save you. Look, this could be the last term life insurance policy you ever have. Your rates are guaranteed for the next 20 years. That's right, guaranteed level rates for the next 20 years. And if you're a smoker or your health is not perfect, Bob has great rates for you too. So for $1 million of term life insurance coverage for a couple of $100 a month, call Bob right now. 800-989-1415. 800-989-1415. 800-989-1415. That's 800-989-1415. Paid for by Term Direct.
How would you like to save money on nearly all your prescription drugs? We've set up a special toll-free number for the RX Outreach Program. They're a nonprofit company whose mission it is to make prescription drugs more affordable to the masses. They don't take insurance, and in many cases, your prescriptions are even cheaper than your co-pays. They carry thousands of different prescription drugs, so whatever you're taking, there's a good chance they have it. No coupons are required, and this is not a discount card. It is pure savings on your prescription drugs. They specialize in generic meds for any chronic health needs you have. Call with your prescription and find out for free how little you can pay for your prescription drugs. Remember, we don't take insurance, so call right now.
800-586-9885. 800-586-9885. 800-586-9885. That's 800-586-9885.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients, and you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks,
stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
We're back.
Hello and welcome back, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe, Jim Lawler on the board. SP Futures up 30. NASDAQ futures up 121. Now we're going to get this week, we're going to have the both the September and the December on both of these numbers, and then one of them will fall off on Friday, and we'll be left with the March. So right now we're talking about the SPZs, which is the SPZs, that's the December. The March is the H's, even though they're always called the SPOOs, which are the Septembers because it sounds better. Go around the rest of the world here. We've got over in Europe, the DAX up 102.4%, the FTSE up 86, that's 0.9%, and we got the CAC round up a whole percent at 81 bucks, up 81 bucks. Over in Asia, and these guys are all down last night. Down pretty heavy, is not sure why that that is compared to the rest of the world, but South Korea led the charge down, and it's got the Nikkei's down 668, so that's 1.3%. Hang Seng down 347, 1.4%. Shanghai down 21.5%. So they're heading the different way over there. The bonds, we have, now these guys, the 10 years down 3 basis points, 4.16. They have not moved hardly at all since the three rate cuts in the by the Fed. So you'll be careful with that as that spread is going up. And as people say, I'll talk about that after we're done with this. Oil down 34 cents, 57 bucks. Again, oil is not causing any part of this inflation problem. Gold, however, is the other way, up 50 bucks, 43.78. Silver up $1.84, 63.85. That's a huge number. It's 3% in silver. Copper up 7 cents, 5.43. We have a few of our clients last Thursday and Friday were calling wanting to get in some of the copper stuff. Not as easy to get in the copper as it is the silver and gold. The ETFs are, they're there, but they're spotty, and the options are only monthly. But something that now we're starting to get a little bit of a demand for that. And, of course, there's a article on CNBC over the weekend that somebody's saying copper's going to stratospheric levels. I'm not so sure how much that is. What does that mean, guys? Instead of 542, does stratospheric mean 545 or 10 bucks? Or not sure what that
double
means.
Double it? Triple it?
Triple it, double it, whatever it is. The U.S. dollar, 117.5. Again, the yen is, euro is 117.5. So it's up from 115 of maybe a couple of months ago. So there's been a 1% drop in the dollar value. Same thing over with the pound. It's 133. It got down to like 129. Crypto up $1,000, 89,691, but still under 90,000. Jimmy, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Weather sucks. Bears won. All this weather's going to get better.
Okay. Well, in Phoenix, it's 53 degrees. It'll be warm and sunny and a high of 80, breaking the record of 79 degrees set back in 1970. Now in Chicago right now, it feels like it's 8 degrees with the real feel or the wind chill at -7. We will have, of course, breezy, not as cold, variable cloudiness and a high of 27. Going to traffic today, right now, we have on the Kennedy coming in from Montrose, it is 10 minutes. On the Eisenhower, inbound from the Jane Brown Interchange, 24 minutes on the Edens. On the Eisenhower, inbound from Wolf, it is 19. Inbound on the Dan Ryan, it is 19 from the 95th. And in sports, as we know, the Bears won, Packers lost. Also, we know that the Bulls lost as well, so go Bears. Back to you.
It's not just that the Bulls lost, they suck. So, Jen, is Ole a defense? Is that a new style?
It must be. Tell me about it. I don't know anything about it.
You just get out of the way. You let the other team score 122nd, 122, 125 points. You shoot every chance you get, hoping to score 130. That happens 1 out of 10 times, you know. Just saying. Yeah,
that's torture.
We've got the thing at Brown University, Jen. It looks like they let the guy go, huh? So they don't really have the dude.
Yeah, they said they didn't have enough evidence to prosecute.
How come we went from being a suspect to a person of interest?
Well, you know, person of interest is a pretty generic and lackluster term that just means there's possible connections. It doesn't even imply that you're a suspect. It's just that you may have information, not that maybe you're the perpetrator, but that you know something and you have evidence, you know, that you need to share as part of the investigation. And the next level, you know, would be a suspect of somebody who's believed to be the shooter or the perpetrator. And I heard it, the term bandied around back and forth over the weekend. So I wasn't sure exactly what, you know, level they had reached in their suspicions about this guy, who apparently had come, you know, from Wisconsin convoluted stories like the National Guard shooting in Washington, where he drove cross country to do this. And, you know, other instances I can think of people who travel great distances and, you know, are either being subsidized somehow by somebody in their cross-country junkets to do these things, or somebody knows what's going on. So kind of strange, but it sounds like we're back to square one now with the investigation, which is, you know, demoralizing. And what you were saying about, you know, school shootings generally, Tom, I mean, there was always the sense that a college campus was a, you know, a haven of sorts. And this, you know, from where you could tune out the mess that, you know, you could find in the rest of the world. And these were young people who really hadn't hurt anybody, and there's no reason to go after them. So that began to change in the 60s with the free speech movement and college protests. And, you know,
nobody really got hurt, though. I mean, other than Kent State, where,
right?
But I mean,
right? And you know, you bring up the University of Texas, I mean, shootings that you refer to too, which were the same year as the Richard Speck, you know, murders of the 8 student nurses, the summer of '66. That was in July, and Whitman murders at Austin, where he got up in the tower, you know, the clock tower of the University of Texas, and was picking off people for like an hour and a half.
Why did I think that was '59? Why am I off on that?
I think it was like August of 66.
Okay.
And that you know, coming on the heels of the Speck killings, you know, that was a real gut punch to people in 1966. That nobody really could process how these things were happening. And I think Whitman killed 17 people. He was just was up in this 28-story tower, just, you know, aiming at people randomly. And after that, of course, you get Kent State, and you've had a procession of high-profile events like Northern Illinois, Virginia Tech, and
you lose track of these things. It really is scary.
And of course, this is during exam week, which is always a tense time in any, you know, campus setting, and people who are from all over the country. So you've got the possibility of Brown, you know, people from the Midwest, from all over the place, international students. So this whatever value this has as a terrorist event, and you know, I'm beginning to think that there are certain terrorist events that are truly terror driven, in that they prey on the most innocent and unlikely people as strange symbols in the assassin's mind of what these people represent and why they deserve to die, and the fear that it, you know, propagates, you know, when innocent people die for no good reason, which is kind of the ultimate fear of terrorist acts. You know, there's no retribution involved for anything. There's no culpability.
Well, there's no retribution that could even match the scale of the crime.
No. So it you know, frightens people, paralyzes them, and yet there's what can you do? I mean, I'm always amazed at how maybe campus life is more sheltered today than it was when you and I were students. I tend to think it is in some ways, but in other ways, you know, these campuses really just sort of blend into the rest of their surroundings.
Well, but most campuses, well, I shouldn't say most. We're not from the East. We're not from Brown, which is in downtown Providence, right?
Right.
But I mean, if you went to Notre Dame in the early 70s, you're in the middle of, there couldn't be anything more peaceful, for God's sake. I mean, you go to Western Illinois, you went to Southern Illinois, you went to any of those places, there couldn't be anything more, what's the bucolic, what's the term? It's from a, and the thought of having a gun anywhere on that campus is like, you know, I don't even, there was no thought of any having to worry about anything. I mean, you could have left a $20 bill, maybe a $10 bill on your desk when you were a freshman and still been there when you were a senior. Nobody locked their doors. I mean, it was a...
Right. But even then, I mean, there's no security when it came to who was on campus, who had any business being there. And I noticed that even in my teaching experience in community college level, where there were people hanging around, you know, all day long in the public spaces, you know, who had no business being there.
I don't ever think I ever saw anybody that wasn't a student or a teacher there.
Right. And that's, you would expect that. And yet, you know, I remember there being minimal security on
whenever I went anywhere, John, on a business trip, I would always, if I could, I would always find time to tour the campus of a place where I was, because they were all different, they're all nice. I toured, you know, University of Las Vegas, I did the ones in Arizona, we had a branch there. Whenever we did something for CBOE, I would, you know, it was Ohio State, I walked around there for a while. And it was always, they're all different, it was all kind of the same, just students going to this place and that place, and nobody really, you could walk through and nobody would look at you cross-eyed or anything, but you know,
And nobody would demand identification.
No.
Or, you know, what are you doing here or anything like that? And that, I mean, that, I think, you know, you takes a toll after a while, because it's easy to look like you belong in a college campus.
Well, it's easy to look like you belong downtown Chicago. I mean, that's my big bitch about this security. And I'd take this argument on national TV. If you can't protect anybody, everybody, you can't protect anybody. So the idea of, I mean, look how much money we spent. I mean, when you and I were young, you went to O'Hare, you walked in, you walked on the plane. There were some security people around, like in the movie Airplane, where they were smart enough to look around at people that were very, very well trained And they could tell by the way, you know, in the airplane, they could tell by the guy how the guy was carrying the briefcase, right? That something was wrong with the guy. But there was some security, but the idea of searching everybody, and we've done that now for, well, was it 9/11 or before?
That sounds
right?
The hijacking.
Well, I thought mostly it started by 9/11, but it was before that, I guess. But once it starts going, you can never cut back on security.
Right.
Yet how many bombs did 60,000 people and millions of hours of pestering people, how many planes did we solve? Any?
It's
the eternal question. And somebody's going to say, well, if they only stopped one, I don't know about that. If you feel that way about people's time, you would make your speed limit and enforce it on every street 20 miles an hour.
Right.
That way nobody'd ever get killed. I mean, we use different definitions, and I don't want anybody's plane blowing up. That's not where I'm going on this. I'm just saying, what have we accomplished? We just had, I got mine early, just so happened that I got it when, I needed a driver's license anyway, so it wasn't that big of a pain in the ass. But I got my
Real ID
maybe 5 years ago when it first came out, because I just happened to be there anyway, and I said I better get this because it'd be worse and worse. And I got my gas bill and all the other crap I needed, and I was going there anyway. Plus, it made it easier because the letter you got from the state saying your license was due is considered a good ID that you live there, because they sent it to you, right? I don't know if people know that or not. So I'm sitting there going, there's people scrambling at the real IDs. You know how many people from 9/11 use a driver's license to get on a plane, John?
None. And that's the thing about the real ID that frosts me. That this has no track record. This policy of having IDs issued with this kind of duplicative security clearance stuff has any real effect on safety.
Well,
and I have to laugh too, because remember when it was being pitched initially that you would need this if you wanted to fly. However, if you didn't have one, you could always use your passport in lieu of that, and you would be able to get on an airplane.
Yeah, use the same thing the hijackers use, your passport.
Right. But now, starting in February, if you don't have a real ID, it's a $45 surcharge for
Not if you don't have a passport.
Each ticket,
If you have a passport,
you're okay. That's with a passport. So,
no, it's not.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
If you don't have a real ID, it's a $45 surcharge. I mean, they'll let you on the plane if you have a passport, but they're going to charge you.
I think you might want to check that, because I've got the little passport card. I think that's a real ID.
That's supposed to be. I mean, that's what they pitched it as, a loophole where you didn't need the real ID if you already had a passport, because it was substitutable. The way I read this, and I think
you might be wrong on that. I hope you're wrong. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, I have no intention to get.
I have the little. By the way, if you should, I don't know how much it was, but you should get the little passport thing. I mean,
the car. Yeah, that's well. And the next time my passport's up for renewal, I may do that too, because it's just it's a minimal charge to get it.
Plus, the picture on there looks better than on your driver's license.
Easier than dragging the booklet around all the time. So,
no, I'm just saying. I went to Walgreens. The guy did it as good as he could on me. A nice picture. One of my driver's license looks terrible. Just saying.
I look like a suspect in something.
Oh God, yeah, I look like I went to a wrong. I should be in the post office wall or something. But you look at this stuff and you wonder what are we doing?
And plus, how many years after 9/11 has this finally become, something across the board where it's being enforced? Long after the horse has left the stable.
Well, plus, none of those guys use the driver's license. I mean, you can take the security to the nth degree. At the end of the day, you're right back with 300 million people walking around. I mean, right? I mean, I want to dodge politics as much as I can, but one of the buffoons in the administration now thinks every American now has to carry an identification in case you're stopped by ICE. Even if you're a citizen.
Well, that's the UK's thinking.
It doesn't make it right. I mean,
I'm far from it.
Well, I'm saying, I look at the world. I remember back to the late 60s, early 70s, and the place was one hell of a lot safer without any of this stuff. So tell me how much it's helped us. I mean, how much has it helped us? I mean, people behave worse on airplanes than they did then. Now you let somebody on with a wife beater T-shirts and shorts who's half drunk. You let him on, he's okay because he doesn't have a gun. In those days, don't we dress like that or acted like that?
Well, nor were they dressed that way at a ball game or anything else.
No,
people's idea of being in public and under other people's scrutiny and wanting to present yourself in a certain way has just gone. You know, all those rules are completely out the window now. So you just have to kind of like start from some other point and say, well, if you want to be thought of as posing a threat of some kind, maybe it's better not to look like you are somebody, and then you can avoid scrutiny or you know, being, you know, followed. But it's kind of a joke to me now that it's all. Everybody's acculturated to expect the worst when you've got get on any public conveyance where somebody's going to hijack the plane or somebody's going to set you on fire on the blue line or something else. You fully expect anything, you know, to happen, and knowing that you won't get any help, you know, in the event, even if somebody is arrested, it may be too late, and chances are that person's going to be back out on the street again. So I just think people are sour and jaded about safety as something that anybody takes seriously anymore. Not when it comes to public.
I think you're right, but it's also something that we need. People, you know. Actually, this is one of my big themes here this morning, John, is about this stuff. And I'm going to get this labor number up here for a second, but you know what? I can pretty much ad lib it. Two things. I wanted to. Did you happen to check out the thing about the shipbuilding I sent you last night?
I started to look at it before I went to bed, and I was, you know. Thinking about, you know, this says really, I mean, since World War II, the U.S. has lagged.
And I think lagged is not the right word.
You're collapsed.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. And again, it's for those that like the show or don't like the show, one of the reasons why you do like it is because we tie things together and it seems like everything is the same subject. Some people, to put it blunt, I know that I don't realize a lot of stuff that goes on in other people's businesses other than mine. I mean, I just don't. You hear about it, and we try and cover some of it on the show as it comes up, but pretty much you know what's happening in your world and wherever, but it goes back to a conversation I had with the then Mayor Daley, and we were back in those days, the exchanges were very vibrant. Anyway, there's a club. It wasn't all expensive or anything, like that LaSalle Club. It's now changed its name, but and a lot of people were members there, and you had an interesting clientele, and Daley was a member, and he was there all the time. Actually became pretty good buddies with my brother because they were there every Saturday, and it wasn't, you know, hardly anybody there. But you talked to him, and Sheriff Sheehan was there, and Tom Dart was there. I didn't know Dart very well, but I knew Sheehan pretty well because Sheehan wanted to talk to me about Notre Dame because he was a ref, an NCAA ref at one point. But he was a character, like a nice guy. Big fan.
Yeah, he lived down the street from me when I was growing up. He was a good guy.
Yeah, I mean, he's still. I think he lives in Florida now.
Yeah,
but he's his younger brother does the thing for the Special Olympics.
He's from. Did he go to Mendel?
I think he went to Mendel. Yeah, I'm not positive. I mean, solves a lot of people.
I remember him, you know, in the high school sports days too. So.
And the younger brother, Skinny, is still the main man behind the Chicago Special Olympics, I think. Anyway, So I was talking to Mayor Daley one day, and he says to me, he knew I'd worked for Pullman. He knew everything about everybody, that guy. He had pretty good research on just about anything. And he says to me, hey, how come we don't make railroad cars here anymore? And I go, Mayor, guys like you? He goes, what do you mean? I said, well, there's no logical way to do this. I said, nobody buys anything forever. Then all of a sudden you need it tomorrow. You buy a zillion cars, and then you don't buy anything in for a decade. Nobody can stay in business like that. And he goes, what do you mean? How should we do it? I said, well, Mayor, you've got, at the time I actually knew the numbers. I'd done a bid for it not that long ago. And I said, Mayor, you've got, you know, 2,000, whatever the hell it was, however many thousand, how many cars do you think CTA is? 2,000, 5,000? Say it's 5,000. I said, okay, they last 25 years. Okay, that's 200 a year, right? Or 20 a year, whatever the number is. It's early. I said, it's down. You need to take delivery of like two or four a month. And after 12 years, you bring them back and you totally tear out all the parts. I mean, the stainless steel's still good and everything. Replace the traction motors, replace this, replace, and they're good for another 12 years, and you get 25 years out of them. So there should be a plant here that does that for you. And if there's a problem, if there's a retrofit needed, you can, the track should go right there where you pull in and you can redo it. Suppose you find that all the, you got a real crummy sets of headlights or something. You can pull them all in. And I said, you should have an ongoing place like that here. And he goes, well, why can't we do that? I said, well, first of all, Pullman's closed. He said, what does that mean? I said, Mayor, excuse my French, but you have no concept of what it takes, the background of stuff that it takes to build something like this. How many punch presses, how many of this, how many lathes, how many things you can do for the first car before you start going out for production. A huge place, you got tracks, you got overhead cranes, you've got all this stuff. You have 50 guys, 100 guys working there that know everything about railroad cars. They can start building one tomorrow and designing one. I said, we don't have anything like that. I said, I'm probably the only person left in town that could even think of starting something like that, and I wouldn't have a chance. I don't know where I'd go find five railroad manufacturing engineers, five railroad engineers that can start designing an undercar arrangement drawing. He goes, he looks at me like I had three heads. I go, Mary, you've got a Walmart where the place used to be. All the stuff is gone. I can't imagine putting together a factory where everything you had to buy new, every drill, every this, every that, that you've had for 60 years and the stuff still works. I don't know how, I can't even imagine going to a machinery show and putting all that stuff together, what it would start to do. I said, plus, you'd have to start with a refurbishing buses or something. Something simple, just to get people, you'd have to train these guys, you'd have to do something. Who the hell would give us a performance contract that in 2 years you guys are going to spit out a railroad car when you've never done it before? Who would do that? What manner of moron? Now, the reason why we're saying this is I'm looking at this. There was an article yesterday. I'd encourage everybody to read it. It's by Lori Ann Lococo. Nice Italian girl. Good for her. Or Italian name, anyway. U.S. shipbuilding lags the world and has an experience of boom since World War II. And that's a while ago. But foreign companies with expertise are helping the industry to get up to speed. That's what I would have to do to make railroad cars now. I'd have to go find some idiot who works for somebody else and hire him to teach me how to do it. That makes zero sense, and we used to do that right here. U.S. government began investigating China's dominance in the shipbuilding industry under President Biden and has continued to press the issue under President Trump. China accounts for, now, neither one of these guys accounts for how far it went down since World War II. China accounts for as much as 75% of new ship orders and over half the global shipbuilding market. The lack of updated shipbuilding infrastructure and staff is a challenge for U.S. industry that wants to manufacture natural gas tankers, polar icebreakers, and Navy vessels. You would think we'd still be doing Navy vessels, but I guess we're not even doing that. But here's a graph. China has 232 times the shipbuilding capacity of the U.S., dominates global commercial shipbuilding industry. U.S. has 8 active shipyards. China has 300. John, do you have any idea how bad this was? I had no idea. Now it's turned out we needed to ask them how to build a submarine. I thought we still did that up in Groton. Were we supposed to make submarines?
Groton.
Yeah. Right, whatever. Well, at one time, yeah. You know, and this is, you know, this was the globalist formula, though, Tom, that you know, not only was production being offshored, but you know the technology and the infrastructure, and you know the transportation part of it to get goods from where they had been outsourced to.
Whose idea was this? I mean, we can't do railroad cars, we can't do bridges, we can't do ships. I mean, who's the moron who thought of all this? And don't say it's Democrats. It's got to be across the board. I mean,
I think it was some fleet of MBAs who were looking at the cheapest possible way to do whatever for, you know, and, you know, totally apolitical purposes. So let's not figure in, you know, what does this mean for national security if we give away the shipping industry to any country? Does it make sense for, you know, stuff to be processed and built thousands of miles away, and then allow somebody else to dictate the terms under which that stuff could be brought back here, and to get the contracts for building those ships and everything else, and the shipyards, and keeping their people employed. That was never part of the formula, it seems. It was all about making it as cheap as possible, and we didn't care about any of the ramifications of that. So here we are.
But you say that, and that's the everybody's going to say that, so it's not just you, but walk through it a little bit. I know you're more of an attorney dude than a finance guy, but all right, we're going to assume that they're making less per hour over in China, all right, or Korea, wherever the hell they're doing this stuff. But what about everything else? The power's cheaper here. The rail transportation, the access to other infrastructure stuff to help out, has got to be as good or better here. Doesn't that count for anything?
I don't think it does. I mean, look at somebody like Elaine Chao, who was Mitch McConnell's wife, and she wasn't she Secretary of Labor under Trump's first administration?
Do you think that's a wife based on sexuality or what? Then, or do you think it's worth on?
No,
based on business?
Not at all, not in the least. But her family is the shipping, shipbuilding magnates of China. Do you think it's coincidental that she's married to a U.S. senator? And that McConnell votes on the kind of issues you're talking about? I mean, should there be any interest in returning some of that construction to this country? Well, I suspect if it were, who'd be voting against it, and why. So I hate to make accusations like that without more evidence, but I can't believe that China does not strategize its shipbuilding and its marriages to U.S. politicians and espionage and everything else. It's all a package deal with them. And you can pretty much guarantee that the U.S. is not going to be interested in competing when it's already being controlled to some extent by that arm of Chinese geopolitical.
But that style has come. This is the part that I don't get, John. And we'll talk the rest of the week about this a little bit with different people. I wanted your impression first. I think Jimmy is in the same group as me here, but I won't speak for him. I don't understand why this stuff, when I keep talking during the day about, NVIDIA's up X and it's got 25 billion shares on standing and it's up $5. God, it's $150 billion and blah, blah, blah. I don't understand why. If this stuff is somewhat profitable, or we want it, when I say profitable, the government can pay whatever they want for this stuff, right? So they can pay a price, not saying they should, but they can pay a price to make it profitable here. Now here's the Trump angle on it. And I'm not saying it's wrong. I just am pointing something out. During July trade negotiations, South Korea and the United States announced a $350 billion investment deal. $150 billion of that money to be allocated to maritime investment. The overall trade deal was finalized in November with auto tariffs from U.S. imports. Korea reduced to 15% from 25%. So Trump's making some, and that's his style, okay? I'm not going to criticize. I'm just going to wonder, why should you reinvent the wheel? There's a good reason for friends and allies to work together and capitalize on a company's expertise and experience. So the U.S. is making this, quote, deal. And I will put a little bit of a shot in there that if Trump's making a deal, there's money in there for him or somebody else here. Now, I'm not saying the Democrats wouldn't do it the same way, but John, I don't want any of that crap. I know I'm a purist. And South Korea began to increase its presence in the U.S. maritime industry in 2024 with a $100 million acquisition of Philly Shipyard in Philadelphia. $100 million, John. That's like 10 cents on a NVIDIA share, for God's sake. Right. I mean, what are we doing here? From the Norwegian industrial investment grouper Aker ASA, the yard was then renamed Hanwha Philly Shipyard. Really? And now, in August, Hanwha Group announced a $5 billion infrastructure plan, part of the $150 billion investment for Hanwha Philly Shipyard, the biggest site up to speed so it can expand its vessel-making capacity from 1 a year to 20. 1 a year? What the hell kind of a shipyard is that? Hanwha Philly Shipyard received its first order for U.S.-built export-ready LNG thing from Hanwha's group shipping arm, Hanwha Shipping, in July. First order in nearly 50 years. 50 years. What, What? I'm reading this last night, and I go, this can't be right. Deliveries are expected in 2028, blah, 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 blah. First of all, if we decide we're going to order ships here, why the bleep do we have to get some Korean outfit to invest? I mean, maybe we've lost so much expertise that we need their expertise more than we need the money. Maybe that's
well, I think that that's part of the globalist agenda too, Tom, is to you know, cause such a lag in the possibility of ever catching up again. If somebody were to wake up and say, you know, we could do this ourselves and maintain better control over it in the event of any kind of territorial dispute or something else, and not have to worry about, you know, getting whatever, you know, a Chinese shipbuilder is willing to give us.
By the way, you know, the new CTA cars are made by a Chinese firm.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, when was, I mean, when Pullman made streetcars, you know, and they made rail cars too, but they made, you know, a lot of, big part of the Chicago streetcar fleet back in the 20s and 30s. But after that, I think every major contract by the surface lines and then later by the CTA went to St. Louis,
yeah,
or, you know, somebody else, because there was nothing left here. And there was never any desire or any kind of planning to say, maybe given our consumption of this commodity, and the fact that we you know, thrive on having a good transportation system, how can we streamline the production of our rolling stock instead of having to, you know, not give it a shot to Chicago workers or unions or anything else and throw the money to some other state or some other country? This has been going on now for 80, 90 years. So,
well, you had a funny story. The last bid for the CTA cars, two cars ago, I was still at Pullman. And essentially, I was, you know, a big chunk of putting that bid together. It was right at the time when Pullman was getting bought. So I think, boy, if I recall, it's a long time ago. I did all the, I when you put a bid together, okay, what happens is you, this is simple, but, you know, John, it doesn't seem so simple now. Most people have no idea what I'm talking about when I say it. First thing you do is you read the spec. And you're really not a builder, you're an assembler. I mean, you are a builder, but you're really more of an assembler than you are a builder. So you're going to get the specs from the Chicago Transit Authority, and they're going to say, we want to use these traction motors, we want to use trucks from these guys, we want to use these lights. And they know what they want, right? And you essentially put it all together and make the thing work. But the air conditioners, they're going to tell you who they want, you know, that kind of stuff. So you go to your purchasing guy, and you say, all right, what is all this stuff going to cost that we have to buy? And they put that thing together. And the cars, I think my price on the car was like six and a quarter a car or something, John, $650, something like that. And I'm going to say the material was probably $260, $250 that we're buying from other people. So no matter who you are in the bid, you have to, you know, you got to, then you have to say, okay, how many labor hours? And I think that car did not have that many labor hours. Like, you know, it's an electric car. It's not a railroad car. There's a massive difference between a Rock Island or an Amtrak car and a CTA car. CTA car is essentially a street car on rails. It's all electric. Right. There's no compressed air. There's nothing like that. The doors are electric. The heat's electric. The brakes are electric, believe it or not. You know the thing stops? You two guys around it all the time? Jimmy, I'll give you a shot at this. You know what stops?
Brakes?
No.
How does it stop?
The traction motors reverse.
Oh, so it's like landing a plane.
Yeah, it's dynamic braking. So when you get near the station, you hear that clunk. You know what that clunk is? A magnet reaching down and grabbing the rail. That's the last piece of braking for the last few miles an hour. There's no.
Well, that's how they enforce the speed limits too. When work being done or whatever,
well,
if they automatically engage, you're beeping all the time.
Yeah, you're beeping, and then the traction motors reverse. But now your other cars, your Pullman car, I mean your RTA cars, your Amtrak cars have actually huge brakes on there, air brakes with the big pads and everything. It looks like a huge brake on a car, and it's done by compressed air. But your street cars, even your doors are electric. Now the New York subway cars, they actually are all compressed air. It's a much more complicated piece of machinery. All your doors that open and shut, those are all compressed air. Your air conditioning, all that stuff is different. Anyway, so we put it all together, and I think our number was supposed to be $650. And with a little bit of profit in there and everything. Well, when Wheelbrader bought the place, they upped the number to 8-something-something, which the CTA was all pissed about because they had worked with us pretty good on it. So they were mad at Pullman. Meanwhile, Boeing comes in with something like 475. And I'm sitting there going, these guys are going to lose $100,000 a car. Because I was real familiar with this. So Boeing builds the contract, immediately gets out of the rail car business, because guess what? They lost $100,000 a car. I'm thinking, what manner of moron put this thing together for them? They lost on that contract. They got out of the business. St. Louis Car lost on the R-44. These authorities beat up on these construction people. They lose money, and then all of a sudden they wonder why they're out of the business. Pullman lost a boatload on the R-46 car for New York. New York was so crooked. John, they made, when they got the contract, when I say crooked, I mean crooked. People went to jail for this on this contract. This guy named Larry Piano was the agent in New York. He went to jail. The first thing they told Pullman was, by the way, we like to go to Rangers game. So Pullman had to buy like 8 or 12 tickets for the Rangers every night to give to these guys. They made us join a country club to take them to play golf. This is all part of the deal. I don't think 3, 4, 5 of those guys went to jail. And all my buddies at Pullman were testifying about giving them cash and all this. It was brutal. We lost money in that contract.
One of the things that, you know, always bothered me was, you know, originally this, you know, the equipment was pretty primitive. There wasn't that much to it. And, you know, you could see this in, you know, even recent photographs of the CTA where, you know, the wooden L cars that had been in use since the 1890s when they first opened the system, these were still being run in the 50s. In fact, they couldn't run them in the subways because of the fire hazard.
Yeah.
So they had to run on all the above ground routes. But these things were indestructible, but there wasn't that much to them. You know, they didn't have sophisticated, you
like
know,
I said, they're a streetcar on rails. There's nothing to them.
Right, and they had, you know, no air conditioning.
Oh, no,
the
no.
Air conditioning is a relatively recent phenomenon.
That's actually most of the sophistication in those things is the air conditioning. When they open the windows, they're none of that stuff.
Right, and by doing that, I mean, it used to be that these cars were built so well, and they were so sturdy.
They were heavy.
They had 50, 60 years of service. Some of them are still running in other places. You know, they sold the stuff off to other places or rail museums, and they haul people around in amusement parks and stuff. So they're still running. But that could have been a cottage industry in any city that had enough of a transportation system where it was a steady customer for the, you know, technological advances.
Can you imagine, John, if you made 2 a month and did the rehab, so you're rehabbing 2 and making 2, and had a group of 50 skilled people, who the hell could compete with you?
Right. You could do so much more with your system.
Yeah.
If you had that kind of control over the production part of it, and you would be adapting it to what, you know, the rail car company wants and what kind of a system you have, and you know, you try to juggle these two systems, and it's always going to involve some concession to who's got the ability to build you anything when you don't have any possibility of doing that. So it would be better if you had some leverage or bargaining power when these decisions were made, and you were keeping people here employed, and it would be skilled labor, and it would, you know, it would be just a nice kind of partnership. And it would be an easy way to expand the system because you could keep your costs down.
Well, if somebody got two over their skis, you could go out to bid every once in a while and see if anybody else could do it cheaper.
And just, you know, when there's a technological advance of some kind and it cuts the cost, and you got a captive audience. You're just selling to your own system, pretty much. You could sell to other places too if you wanted, but this was given up long ago. I mean, before I was born.
But you wonder why? What is the purpose? I mean, I was going to lead into this. I know what I actually could tell you a New York story. You want to hear my New York truck story? Take me 30 seconds.
Sure.
The R-46 was a total fiasco for Pullman and for New York. And the reason why was, I think for, like you say, John, 60, 70 years, maybe more, New York used, the truck is the wheel and axle assembly with the motors and stuff. The motors hang on, they're bolted on the wheel and axle assembly. And it's a major piece of the vehicle, right? And it's incredibly heavy. That's why your center of gravity is so low on subway cars. You have all those people on it. You wonder why doesn't it tip over. It doesn't, because your center of gravity is low. And so they, for years, they used a 12,000-pound Buckeye truck. So they got a hair up there behind and said, you know, we need to cut down on the weight of these things because we're not maintaining our right-of-way and our bridges like we used to, which should cause you some concern to start with, right? We need a 9,000-pound truck. And all the people at Pullman are going, wait a minute, that might not be a good idea. Oh, no, we can make a new one. It'll be only 9,000 pounds. Well, Buckeye wants no part of it. So North American Rockwell gets into the truck business. First time they ever made, I think it was the first time they ever made, might not have been, but I think it was. They design and build this 9,000-pound truck. Now, New York doesn't let Pullman anywhere near the design or construction or inspection process of this new truck. This is what you idiots are going to use. Okay. Pullman makes the rest of the car, does all the rest of the stuff, slaps the cars on these new trucks. They also, there's kind of a thing in there where you have to research the environment, but then again, they are going to define the environment for you. And they're going to say the environment is, you know, when you go over to the clacks, it'll clack, 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 you know, the expansion joints.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're there for expansion, but if they get too wide, obviously they're a problem, right? Because your thing is ducking in there. Your car would be clunking instead of clacking. So they said, okay, the biggest break you're going to see is like 3/4 of an inch, an inch or something, which isn't so bad. But, I mean, what if it gets to 2 inches? Well, then it's beating the living bejesus out of your truck and axle combination, right? Because now all of a sudden you got this divot you're going over. Like a pothole. And so they said it was only... So they decide these trucks are okay. Well, they're not okay. All of a sudden, this one arm is coming off the truck. These bolts are coming loose, and the arm's coming off the truck. And when it came off, if there was a maintenance guy along the side of the road, it would, like, cut his legs off. That's not a good thing. So they decide, okay, the problem is with these bolts. So Pullman has to retrofit the entire fleet in New York, even though it's not our truck. They have to go out and buy forged bolts instead of cast bolts. I mean, I don't know what that means. Forged means you take one piece of metal and you pound the crap out of it to make it what you want. It's incredibly stronger than cast, where you just pour the stuff in, right? So we're paying like $4 a bolt in 1977, and we retrofit the entire fleet of 760 cars with the new bolts. Okay, so now that thing doesn't come loose. Now it's causing cracks in another part of the truck. So meanwhile, the Pullman engineers that are you know, I'm talking to everybody, imagine that. Guy goes, these trucks are no good. And I go, what do you mean? He says, all we're doing is chasing the stress around the truck. Fact is, the truck is not beefy enough. It's just not, you know, it's not strong enough. And every time you fix a spot, it's going to pop up somewhere else. That's what stress engineers can tell you. So all of a sudden, New York gets the light dawns that the trucks aren't any good. So they need new trucks. So they sue Pullman, who had no part of the design of the thing, was not left in there, and they end up winning. So Pullman has to come up with money for the trucks and Rockwell, and somehow we had to retrofit them. That's why people want no business. You know, foreign countries just say, screw you, just try and sue us in China, and they get away with it. We're here. These guys beat up on everybody. And then they went to jail. So anyway, maybe it was a little longer. But I don't know if you knew that story, but that's why people won't want any part of this business. But now all of a sudden, but here's one. I mean, you're a Wisconsin guy every once in a while. Evidently, one of the shipyards left is actually up in Wisconsin. And they had a couple of it was bought by Italian people. In addition to South Korea, Finnish and Italian companies are also being tapped to expand U.S. shipbuilding. Italian Prime Minister, whatever her name, Giorgia Meloni, reconfirmed joint statement. Trump's U.S. commitment to U.S. Now, there's an outfit in Wisconsin in 1942. They built naval vessels, right? I think these guys used to do minesweepers. I think I toured this place once. But now they just laid off 93 employees a week after the Navy canceled 4 frigate orders that would have been built in Wisconsin. Instead of building 6, the company said, no, they only want 2, so they laid off 93 people. They're going to get these frigates someplace, because right. I mean, now all of a sudden they had 3,000 people in 3 yards, and now they're down to whatever. I mean, we can't wait to bury these people. Now we say, where are they? I mean, is there an adult anywhere in this room?
Find, please.
I mean, I agree.
It's a long, sad story, and it's not just the transportation, too. Of course, you know, it's much bigger than that. But all of a sudden, there's always some wake up call. It's like, gee, how could this happen? Oh, we have to reverse direction here. Is it too late? You know, what can we do here? And this is what you would think in any kind of a business, there would be people who would be on the alert so that this never even becomes an issue or a threat. It's always kind of a step ahead of the game to protect what industries you have and to keep them flourishing rather than, you know, try to, you know, beat them up and put them out of business as fast as possible. That seems to be the playbook.
Well, I mean, I'm trouble. Seriously, you're supposed to help me, you and James. I'm trying to circle back to the murders and the fact that we have, you know, we have to walk around, you have to worry about everybody carrying a gun and doing crazy stuff to you. As the September numbers came out, we have 103 million people in this country that are of working age that are not working. I'm not talking about the unemployment rate, which is a load of crap. I'm saying, now, a big chunk of these people retired. They're not bothering anybody. Big chunk of people are students, and they're not buying anybody. There's 103 million people, John, without a friggin' job. And I'm going to...
And a lot of them without any skill, including reading and asking.
And how do you... I'm one of these... I know this is maybe, you know, I was going to say an old and mature guy talking... I think when people hate other people and spend all day in front of right-wing or left-wing TV or radio, and all they do for a living is hate, it's because they don't have anything better to do. It's really hard for somebody who actually has a job all day and does stuff, that has to take care of a family, change a diaper, mow the lawn. It's really hard for you to spend 5 hours a day hating people. I'm not saying you can't, but it's you have other stuff to do. Now, I was just thinking last night, I was going to ask you and Jimmy. I probably know, and I don't know that many people. You know, when you get older, you don't know that many people with kids and stuff. I can probably name you just some people we know. You know, Audrey knows a lot of people from real estate. Nancy knows a lot of people from whatever. I bet I can name, I don't even know their names, 10, 15 adult people living at home in somebody's basement, their parents' basement, watching some kind of computer crap all day long, probably hating somebody. What? They should be working at the goddamn shipyard, John, or we're making railroad cars, or trading stocks, or doing something. What? We don't have time to sit there and hate all day. I mean, even if we wanted to, there's some connection to all this, isn't there? Doesn't it seem?
Some of it is not even the ones who are working. I mean, the ones I see commuting, I assume they're going to jobs when they're driving, on a bus or whatever. So they're employed somewhere, I suspect, because they're dressed well enough to be in an office and among the public. But when I look at what they're doing with their time, you know, it's one thing to have your phone out all the time, but what they're doing on the phone is so unbelievably juvenile and mindless. You know, some ridiculous game that's, you know, the advertising for these games too shows just how pervasive this kind of, you know, habit people have developed, where you're not thinking about, you know, if you were, you know, a valuable employee in some industry, you'd be reading stuff about it, you'd be thinking about it, you'd be, you know, planning your next move for a career standpoint. Instead, you're just kind of, you know, playing with yourself on these devices, where if you are a thinking person, or if you do have a marketable skill, and you've got something that people are willing to pay you for, you're not cultivating. You're just, you know, in the moment where you're trying to line up these dots or this, you know, fake dragon, you know, assault or you name it. And I just, you know, you couldn't have justified that kind of expenditure of time 20 years ago, let alone there was no technology to make it possible where you could carry this stuff around with you and amuse yourself all day long. And they're doing it when they're on the clock too. So I'm just thinking, well, there isn't enough kind of curiosity or, you know, professional approach to the skills we do have that people spend a lot of money acquiring, where they, when they have a chance to kind of like, you know, spin their wheels and think about stuff, taking this to the next level, they're regressing by playing these childish games all the time. I hate to sound like an old funny dude.
Well, but you know, it's, John, I was going to say that, you know, growing up on the south side in St. John Fisher, I never, other than, you know, somebody talking, I don't think I ever met a Jewish person. All of a sudden, I go to Pullman, and I meet, well, Robin was Jewish, and best friend for life, and, you know, we dated for 10 years. I met her family, and then the guy, one of my best friends, Marty Leno, was a Torah scholar, and he was Pullman, and he was a manufacturing engineer and helicopter engineer, worked for the Pentagon. Could have been the smartest man I ever met. Nicest guy that ever was. But I, well, the thought of me, if, I mean, my stepfather, who would say that when you get in the Army, one of the best things about being in the Army is you meet people from all different walks of life. You may not even really like them, but you learn to work with them. You learn that they maybe just have different customs. They're not bad people. You learn to work with them, and you get stuff done. Now, what do? The people that hate Jewish people, have you ever even met one? Or they just get out of line saying, these are people I'm supposed to hate? I mean, what is going on here?
Well, it's the kind of the exact opposite of some socializing process whereby you are, you know, willing to learn from people, some of them total strangers, some of them people maybe you work with and don't know very well, but there's a lot to be exchanged between you in the social skills and getting along. And people are entirely too wrapped up in their own kind of imaginary worlds where they resist having to deal with other people. And I can see at times, even in customer service situations, where you, if you have to go in and ask an employee at some place, you know, how to get from point A to point B in whatever process you're talking about, the younger the person, you know, you're looking at, the more incapable they are of understanding what you are talking about. They don't know their role in this process. They really are not comfortable talking to people or negotiating information. And you would think, you know, with all the opportunities you have to find, you know, just static in the air about what's going on in people's lives, there's this inability to kind of take any time to study it or think about it or use it. So you got people who are, you know, completely lost in their own thought, and they can't deal with something coming in to disrupt whatever reverie they're in the middle of. And even when they're getting paid to deal with the public, they don't know how to do it. They don't have language skills sufficient to it. They can't understand a question. They can't give a clear answer to it. Even if they may know what the answer should be, they can't express it in a way that's productive. And I just see so much wasted energy in people dealing with, you know, the customer service ends of any business with the kind of employees that they have. And it isn't that they're stupid. I'm not accusing them of being stupid, but they're ill-adjusted to what they're getting paid to do. And I don't see anybody being very concerned about how to improve this or to even notice it. And I don't know how these people will ever become really valuable.
Yeah, I don't either. It's we got to go to break here pretty soon. But hey, Kevin's been texting in about, you know, the globalist agenda. When did the globalist agenda, I'm going to go back to Harold Janine, when did it change from we have good stuff, we have advantages in making certain things in this country because we've got power, we got land, we had education and people, and other people have other, they have more labor, which is an advantage to them, so maybe they can work a little cheaper because that's their benefit, you know, it's a factor of production. There's always ways to trade with somebody else, but when does that become we're going to lose all our capability and just move stuff other places and become, you know, where the people who the globalists become the power instead of somebody who's just selling stuff place to place? I mean, the basics of this, and I can't go through it now because maybe next week, John, we'll go through this. That even if there's a thing in economics, and I'll brush up on it a little bit, or maybe Hal will go through it. If I'm a farmer and I do everything better than you, I grow corn better, I have cattle better, I make butter better, I make milk better, even if I do everything a little bit better than you, it's still beneficial for us the thing you do best that might even be still not as good as that I as efficient as I do my worst, it's still better for me to buy that from you and you buy the other stuff from me. And
yes.
It's a concept that very few people realize. So global trade, I'm kind of in the middle of this. I want no part of the Trump tariff long-term kind of crap that we're losing from everybody kind of thing. But I also don't want any of this globalist view either. So maybe next week we'll talk about is there a middle there, or am I just being inconsistent? I don't think I am.
Well, you asked when it began, and we can talk about this too, but I mean, it started in things that the U.S. had generally, you know, brought to a very high level.
Let's leave it for next week, because we got a lot coming out. Let's talk about when the attitude began. I think it began with the multinationals, I think, but that, again, we'll get Kevin's opinion on that Wednesday, or maybe we'll get him to pile in next Monday. I think it's pretty important where you want trade, but you don't want the other, I think. Anyway. SP Futures up 33, NASDAQ Futures up 140. We'll do a quick break, and we'll have Audrey on, and we'll talk about some real estate and other stuff. John, you're hanging with us, I hope. Be right back,
sure.
Stocks and Jocks.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
What are you going to do with your old car? You can try selling it, you could junk it, or you can donate it to Heritage for the Blind. Your car will be towed away for free, and your donation is tax deductible. Just call 1-800-639-8620. Heritage for the Blind accepts cars, vans, trucks, and boats. It doesn't matter if your vehicle runs or not, it'll be towed away for free, and you'll be supporting those that need help. Heritage for the Blind is a nonprofit organization that helps the visually impaired live fuller lives. Call right now to donate your car. And as a special thank you for calling, you'll receive a free 3-day vacation voucher to many exciting locations. Call Heritage for the Blind right now. Call 1-800-639-8620. Donating is easy, and your vehicle is towed away for free. Plus, you'll get a free vacation voucher. Call now, 1-800-639-8620. That's 1-800-639-8620.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
We're back.
Hello, welcome back, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tamal Jim Lawler on the board. Real quick here, SP Futures up 33, NASDAQ Futures up 139. These are those are the March numbers. The December's are a little under that, but about the same. By the way, we have the labor numbers tomorrow, and then we have the CPI on Thursday. So we're going to try and see if Carl's available tomorrow to sneak in the last half hour with Hal, so they can both gang up with me on that. Over in Europe, we have the DAX up 89.4%, FTSE up 93, almost 1%. It's down a little bit the last time we went through this. CAC around on 82, it's one full 1%. So bullish in Europe, exactly the opposite in Asia. Nikkei down 668, 1.3%. Hang Seng down 347, 1.3%. Shanghai down 21.5. This is all because South Korea was really down earlier. So, I mean, they're all not so good over there. Bonds, real quick, down 3 basis points, 4.16. Again, 10-year has not moved since the Fed went down 3. So careful there. The idea that everything's coming down, mortgages and everything. No, they're not. Oil down 12 cents, 57.32. Ouch. Gold way up. Up $44, $43.73, and silver up almost $2, $3.16. Copper up 12 cents. I've started giving copper every day. Everybody's thinking that's the next big jump here. Crypto up 662, 89,319 after being under 90. Jimmy, give us a shot about the Bears and whatever else is going on.
Well, as we know, the Bears did win, and it is cold in Chicago. And traffic times are mounting, not surprisingly, inbound Kennedy. From Montrose is 22 minutes. The inbound Edens from Lake Cook is 36. The inbound Eisenhower from Wolf is now at 30. And the inbound Dan Ryan from 95th is 23. And yes, we do have Audrey on the line.
Hey, real quick, guys. I mean, we're not really that much of a news show, but what is the story with Rob Reiner and his wife getting murdered?
Supposedly, it is his son is the number one suspect, who had troubles with drugs for many years.
Is he the guy who did All in the Family?
He was Meathead.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow, he
did. And director, you know, did a lot of, you know, high profile, you know, good directing jobs. So yeah, that's sad. Very sad.
Odd, how are you?
I'm fine. Good morning, everybody.
Yeah,
good
morning, Audrey. I just, you know, you read these stories and one's worse than the other, for God's sake.
That's so sad. It's so rewarding to raise a child.
Yeah. Well, the guy, boy, talk about that. There was one of your Irish guys, Jen. Of course, in my neighborhood, everybody was an Irish guy. There was this dude that lived across the street. What the hell is his name? Valentine O'Grady was the guy's name. This tough little Irish guy.
How'd you grow up with that?
Oh, I know. Well, the guy was an attorney. One like you, John, and his attorney. The guy's probably 5'7", 5'8", shoulders as wide as they can be. Tough little dude. His wife was head taller than him. They had three kids. The older one, the nicest guy that ever walked, played football for Northwestern. Taught me how to shoot a basketball. The son that was 2 years older than me, maybe 3 years, could have been the meanest guy I've ever met. Just didn't go near the dude. He was a quarterback for our grammar school team, was a really good athlete. Then he went to Brother Rice. He was going to be a star quarterback, and Brother Rice yanked him out of, said he couldn't be an honors second year. So the old man got all pissed off and made him go to Mendel, where he had to sit out a year. And he was a quarterback there, and he ended up going to Harvard. I think he was a Harvard quarterback. And then he graduated Harvard.
But he came to a bad end, is that what you're saying?
Well, no, he came back, never got a job. Never got a job, kind of like all the guys we're talking about in people's houses. He was like the first guy I ever knew that lived in his parents' house doing nothing. And all of a sudden, one day, blasted the mother and father away with a shotgun.
Wow. Right.
So sort of, is this, that's the same sort of thing they think here happened to Rob Reiner?
Well, I guess it's obviously a mental illness, but I think back then, they called them bad seeds or something like that. Now, people are like, poor little Johnny, he's just not misunderstood. And all of a sudden, bam, you're dead.
Well, they didn't have the drugs back then.
Right. Well, yeah, there was always something, whatever it was. But now people are just in denial because it's the whole not my child thing until it's too late. And, you know, adults, not just kids, are screaming for help. And people choose to ignore it. And by the time they address it, sometime it's, trade has left the station, it's too late to help anybody.
Well, Ed, we're trying to tie together somehow people shooting people staying at home with nothing to do all day and shipyards closing when they're looking for people and what a big mess it all is. How are we doing with that, John? How are we doing tying that all together?
Yeah, we're on all counts, we're failing.
but at least we're... Go ahead, Ed.
No, I just, the whole thing goes back to education also. No one is educated. The teachers aren't educated. There's a lot of good teachers out there, but what they're allowing people to teach, I mean, if you get teachers who cannot do basic skills and you put them in charge, and I think the biggest thing is when did teaching the basics go by the wayside? Where is it more concerning? When did the schools get involved in people's sex lives? That's what I don't understand. They're more concerned about helping their gender than to see if they can add or subtract or read. There is no education. I mean, if you look at what's been passed in the schools and the dumbing down of education, and that started during our lifetime. You know, when people got graded on a curve, or you didn't know this because it doesn't matter.
Well, graded on a curve was just the opposite. You had to have people fail just because somebody else did better. That was nuts.
Well, it's just this is a big generational problem, and if this generation, I think Generation Z is recognizing a lot of that. It's going to take another year or two, generation or two, to turn it around and educate. You've got this whole middle that can't do anything, and to a point in the stores and the phone, and it's the addiction and a lack of reasoning skills and a lack of attention, it's all tied into it.
Well, how do you, and Jan's the educator, how do you...
I don't know if you change it unless you...
How do you explain to people that you ought to be able to read and write and you ought to be able to do math when they say, what do I need it for? I got a calculator. I mean, I'm with you on this. You're preaching to the choir. I know you know that, but how do you make that argument?
Well, the brain has to develop. I mean, even a monkey could use a calculator after a while, but it's the same thing for getting rid of cursive. Cursive is only a form of communication, but it also, they found, stimulates a part of the brain. It helps it learn.
Careful with that. I was such a bad writer. Are you saying my brain's messed up?
Well, but you
wrote cursive type, even people who wrote.
Nobody could read it. I wrote it.
Yeah, but the process of doing it, and Audrey, you're right. There are studies, the fluency that comes from putting your thoughts together and keeping your pen on the paper and not block printing everything, which is extremely exhausting and time consuming and not worth the effort if that's the only way you know how to write, text. But it improves your reading skills too if you can process it and produce it in a way that's time efficient, or more efficient than doing it the way most people now do it. And it stopped being taught as a skill, and it wasn't always taught very well. And not everybody writes beautiful cursive, but the habit of doing it was productive, and it enabled you to have a kind of outreach and skills that you've lost when you don't do that. And I don't think we really understand the totality of how much of a difference it makes. It clearly doesn't help with reading skills. So.
No, it's everything you said is true, but I think if you want to look at your conspiracy theory, you're taking away a form of communication. There's a lot of kids now, it's not been taught maybe about the last, I don't know, let's say 8 to 10 years consistently. They can't read it. So if they can't read it, they can't communicate a certain way.
You're saying kids only learn how to print now. They don't know how to write.
Well, they can't read the writing either because they don't know how. So
how could you not be able to...
Stupid people.
How could you not be able to read it? It's not that far
because
off.
Because they don't know what the letters look like. Tom. Ah. They've never been taught it. So if you don't... I had a mailman who couldn't read the writing already. A young mailman. Now that's frightening. They can't read cursive. You can't communicate. What is going to go by the wayside? So you're imprisoning people in stupidity. I think it goes a whole along with the disruption of society. It's another way to imprison people with your own stupidity.
Right, and cutting you off from your past. And if you look at the Declaration of Independence,
you can't read it.
Philadelphia, it might as well be in Sanskrit.
True. It's like we can't read the antiquated type of script. That's what's going to happen here, but. There's nothing to replace it.
What do you mean? You got your phone to replace it.
No, because one of these days when phones are subject to regulation and you can only use it for certain things, or that now implanted in you, if you want to go a little farther down the science fiction path, the whole thing is about control. And you go to a point where you watch your globalists, it's the whole same thing again. And people don't realize that they are.
Without getting into politics of it, though, every single...
It's a lifelong thing.
Once you go in this, down this road into this security, and then you throw liability on top of it, there's only one direction it seems to go. I mean, what would have to happen in this country for people to say, we don't need the TSA anymore? I mean, I'm not saying you should never have anybody at the airport keeping your eye out for people, but the idea that what would have to happen? How many centuries without a plane going down would we have to have? People feel comfortable.
Well, it's worse now, so I think we'll have to have it forever. So
okay, but I'm saying, but people feel comfortable with it. I mean, when was last? I mean, how long ago was when you walked into a ball game, for God's sake? Now everybody's got to have their purse checked. They have this checked. They have this checked. I mean,
because the world's a crazy place.
Well, but okay, but I'm saying when you walk down the street or whatever, my point is, who decides?
I don't even like to go on a bus with people.
Well, I understand that, but but where does it end? I mean, you walk into a McDonald's, you got to have a security check in there.
Maybe.
But if the answer is no, why do you have to have it in a ball game? I mean, There's this whole
because because the odds for escape and disaster are enormously multiplied.
Well, okay, but when they put the bazillion dollars here into the Federal Reserve to harden the place, where they took the whole street, where they could take a whole picture of a truck coming in, the whole thing's, it's a secure to all get out. We don't want anybody at the Federal Reserve getting, because it's, quote, a target. What about the poor assholes that are across the street walking into their building? They got no security, so you just turn around and shoot them instead.
If you want to make it personal, look at when we were still on the CBOE floor, and they ended up closing the visitors gallery because we had so many bomb threats.
No,
there.
They did that because they wanted to. That's the people use this as an excuse for stuff.
No, and it was also very frightening. I mean, you didn't know who was coming and going at that time, and then we got turnstiles, and then we had to go through security. Remember?
Yeah, and I used to. I have a different view of this because I used to be in these meetings when I was on the board. John, you wouldn't believe these idiots. They'd get a firm that would do the review for you of your security. Now, you two are bright people, and so is Jimmy. You know exactly where this is. What are the chances? what are the chances of A, me being a jockey in a seventh race today, or somebody walking in and saying, your security's fine, you don't need me. Thank you very much for the opportunity and walking out. What are the chances of that?
Zilch.
Oh, God, you guys have no idea how wide open you are.
Really? Well, the world is just changed. It's just like everybody, you and I grew up where we didn't even have to lock our doors, and then we locked our doors, and now everybody's got home security, and you've got car alarms. So what are you saying?
We're no safer, is all I'm saying. You're forcing the guy to go next door. It's not a cure. Anyway, what's going on? What's going on in real estate, Ed? What's the word? The 10-year rate is not going down, even though everybody will tell you how much the interest rates are going down. So mortgages are kind of right where they were. What does that mean for you and the lovely Nancy? You've still got some biz, but it's still kind of...
It's really busy. I mean, I'm still very busy.
Yeah,
we still have a shortage of homes here. And you know what? Interest rates have come down. They're hovering right around maybe six to six and a quarter now, depending on your credit scores. 6.8, 6.25.
Well, they're down from a few years ago. But you gotta delineate yourself a little bit, though. You're not the real estate person. Somebody's going to call up out of the blue. This general population. Your clients are people that have done work with you for a long time and know you're good, so you can be busy when nobody else is. What's the industry like, I guess, is my question.
The last couple of years, some people have gotten forced out. When the interest rates go high, it's like anything else. Some mortgage brokers will leave the industry. Realtors will leave the industry. People have no idea how hard it is. So maybe somebody new said this isn't for me, or somebody retired early, because you do need to work off a client base. But as an overall picture, this is the normal slow time of year anyway, and then you add the snow and you add the cold weather. So if it's not somebody who is extremely motivated, they might be, home on the couch right now or Christmas shopping, saying I'll think about that after the Super Bowl. But all in all, It's steady. I would say I'm right about. I check the numbers every morning when we open up, which tells us how many deals have been signed up in our MLS system, which goes all the way to Wisconsin. It's the whole basically eastern quadrant of the state for the one major system that a lot of us belong to, and it's the numbers have been looking pretty good. So it was very busy about 2 weeks ago, and now it's a little quieter because we're that Thanksgiving New Year's thing. But if it's as I see it, as I look every day, because for clients that are searching for something, if it is a nice house, there are multiple offers.
Well, when you say that, might not
have as many people. So, but that's the same thing in any business. The top 20% make like 80% of the money.
But I mean, when you say the numbers are good, and are you talking from last year, from COVID, from before COVID to, when was the last time you saw maybe like sort of like a normal year, where it hasn't really been normal since so many people are buried in houses at 3%, right? I mean, it's not really been normal since then, has it been?
It's, yeah, I mean, you're still seeing a good volume. You're seeing everything being sold, I think, that can be.
Okay.
Even at the high, because people accommodate, you adjust to your circumstance no matter what it is in life, and you adjust it to the interest rates if you had to find a place to live. You maybe bought a smaller house, but and you maybe put less down, but you have to live somewhere. And since rents are so exorbitant, they end up, you'll buy something and say, maybe I'll trade it when interest rates come down, or I'm happy here.
What did you make of, I don't know if you were listening last week, or if Jan was it like Wednesday or Thursday, Jan, a number came out, I don't know who the hell does this stuff, I remember the numbers, I don't remember who did it, that the average person who works in retail now, whatever that means, makes 36 grand a year median, and the you need 70 or 72,000 to rent the average apartment. So you're making like half of what you need for the apartment. Is that, obviously if you have two people working in the apartment, you get there, but is that kind of the phenomenon that you're seeing, Otto or Jan?
I
think, you know, to live in a decent apartment, you know, with some amenities and at an address you're not embarrassed to tell people about.
Heat and water.
Yeah. Just to take this into the tax angle for a minute, there was a story, you know, a couple weeks ago where the building at 30 North LaSalle Street in Chicago, which is this faceless skyscraper that replaced the Adler and Sullivan landmark, the old Chicago Stock Exchange, which was a glorious building. You know, they wrecked that.
How did that ever happen?
Well, I thought that thing was
a landmark.
I don't think it ever got to the last stage of landmarks preservation. And the irony is, they ended up having to reconstruct the trading room at the Art Institute as an exhibit because it was such a wonderful design. And they have the arch for the building, you know, on the Columbus Drive side of the Art Institute as an important artifact.
Really?
But the building that replaced it was the typical faceless skyscraper where all the windows fell out, and, you know, just disaster story. Now it's been granted landmark status because they want to give a tax incentive to the developer to convert it into low-income housing. So now we're going to have new property that, you know, it should be taxed as commercial space at a higher rate. Instead, we're going to throw landmark status at it and now have it taxed as residential, you know, property.
I'd love to see whose name is on that property.
Well, yeah, Audrey. And of course, that's going to do is drag down the tax revenue even more for new properties, so that the burden on residents, you know, elsewhere in Chicago besides the Loop, is going to have to continue to explode.
Jan, how do you put families in an area now? You could, I'm not against people living in commercial areas. I mean, people do in New York all the time, but you're talking about an executive being there because that's where he works. Doesn't necessarily need a park, doesn't really need a playground. I mean, how the hell do you put a family downtown here?
Well, and not if you expect them to go have kids that are going to school, because there's no schools in the Loop.
No churches, there's no nothing, for God's sake.
I mean, there's no grocery stores. I mean,
no,
there's,
I mean,
lots of things you don't have, but you know, when you talk about, you know, trying to afford, you know, a residential lease, this is becoming, you know, everybody is going to be seeking, you know, qualification to get low-income housing assistance, even in the not-so-nice neighborhoods, because there isn't enough, you know, of decent space in decent neighborhoods to, you know, support the kind of rent that it takes nowadays and the kind of incomes that people are getting on their jobs.
Well, then you guess who's going to pay for that?
It's so out of whack.
All you have to do is hop on the Rack Island, head south, and you see massive amounts of just empty property where you can have houses, two flats, three flats, and you can't, you're one L stop from downtown. Why try and make downtown into the area that should be there? I mean, what are we trying to do here? This is crazy.
Well,
most people should be working down here and living there.
The figure in the pie is making money, Tom, in Chicago.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to make any money.
You can't build property to live in some of those, you know, devastated neighborhoods. You have standing buildings downtown that can be reconverted, but to no real benefit, you know, financially or, from a tax revenue standpoint.
Or whoever has it is going to convert it, sell it to the government, take their money, dust their hands of it, and then we have another problem.
We're talking about areas that are two or three square miles that are vacant. You can make a neighborhood. There's nobody there.
You can't make a neighborhood from scratch and call it a neighborhood, Tom. It's got to develop organically to be a sustaining thing. And I mean, if you made it a gated community and got all sorts of high-end people to go in and build McMansions and have it, tight security, you could have that almost anywhere you wanted. And maybe there's enough people around to do that in some of these areas, but the average person can't build an average bungalow or a two-flat and not be completely bankrupt in the process. You just can't do it anymore.
Well, which gets back to, if all these people were working at the shipyard making real dough, they could afford it. Isn't that the idea?
If there were
just think if they opened up all the steel mills again out south or some type of business and that whole area became revitalized, but nobody seems to get their act together politically. They're
no, it's a lot easier to keep them going even through tough times than to try to rebuild them from scratch.
You see, these arguments are, these discussions, we'll say arguments, become totally circular. If we had a job, we could have a house, we could have this. And if we had a house, we could have taxes. If we don't figure out a way to get this rolling somehow.
Well, the whole thing goes back to education.
Well, yeah.
And also civilization, because of a lot of the neighborhoods are so unsafe.
Right.
And for all of the moaning about the National Guard coming in, I don't see Pritzker or Johnson have made these neighborhoods any safer or any more well-educated or not a food desert. So they're all useless, and nothing has been done. They're too busy with all this sticking their nose in national politics.
I just wonder how
serving
much
the people that hired them.
I wonder how much of this is in some areas just total degradation of families and stuff. And it's the schools,
they don't want the family. That's what this is all about.
Well, I don't necessarily know what it's all about, but one thing's for sure. Market's up today, up 36, NASDAQ up 168. We've got gold and silver to the moon. Somebody was going crazy about copper this morning. Art, are you a copper? Are you bullish on copper, or what are you?
I think any metal is probably something you want right now, just the way the world is going. Well, precious metals, copper, rare minerals.
I got a big spool of wire down in the basement.
Hang on to it.
Yeah, wish I
got health potential too, Tom.
The one of my buddies.
Make your tinfoil hat then.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? Do you believe the thing? I can't get over it. I was giving Hal a bunch of grief because he was talking about, I don't know, he had a conspiracy theory about something. So I said, where'd you get your tinfoil hat? So I actually Googled tinfoil hat. I found one. It actually doesn't look bad. some nice looking lady wearing it. So I sent it to Hal. I don't think he was too happy.
There's all make sure it's American made, Tom.
But I mean, there's got to be.
Who wrote their tollway transponders.
There's got to be 30 different. There's got to be 30 different models of tinfoil hats on the internet. What a great world we live in. It's like, hey, I need a tinfoil hat. Anyway, thank you, Art. Thank you, Jan. It's Futures again, up 36. Nancy. Jimmy, nice job. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.